Good to be back with you. It's good to see you here. But my lesson this morning is one that, at least to me, is as sober as it gets. I think there is a need in our Christian life for our merriment, for our laughter. There's also a need in our Christian life to consider some issues very seriously. A fancy life or a simple life? A busy life or a simple life? A complicated life or a simple life? Solomon, I believe, told us, "I have lived the fancy, busy life, but it is the simple life that satisfies the most." Several months ago, I was asked by a congregation to give a lesson entitled, "What the World Needs Most Today." The elders asked if I would share my thoughts with you on that. They don't know what I said then, but they were intrigued by the topic. What's really needed in today's world? 1965, Burt Bacharach wrote that famous song that those of us with a little age on us can remember. "What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone." And to an extent, he had a point. Not being able to read his mind, I suspect he was referring more to what we in the Greek would say would be philia or eros. But if we can engage agape, the Christian godly love, in that, then love does lift us, doesn't it? What are the most significant signs of God's love to us? Well, the one that would probably be at the head of our list was the giving of His Son. But I think not far behind that or tied with it were the gracious warnings He gives us. Many today don't know what love is, and they don't know that it's simply there for the taking. But as I reflected upon this, it struck me that what the world needs now is exactly the same thing that you and I need. And I tried to melt it down to the old 25 words or less. I got it to 12 words, which will be the backbone for my thoughts today. What's really needed in today's world is that, number one, life is serious. Number two, actions have consequences. And number three, Jesus is the only answer. Life is serious. Actions have consequences. And Jesus is the only answer. If I knew this was going to be the last sermon I ever present, and it could be, probably won't, but could be, what would I say? If you knew that this was your last week, and by this time next week you would be laying surrounded by satin in a box, and the backhoe had already dug the hole for your coffin, how would you spend it? What would you say? Well, many of us won't have the knowledge of when our last week is, but several of us were at a funeral yesterday. The Van Aignams are obviously going to have one this week. They didn't know the exact timing of this. My mind goes back to 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verses 8 and 9, where David had a pretty good idea that his life at least was coming to an end. And in verse 9, he talks to Solomon, his son, who is his heir apparent, if you will. And he says this, "Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, serve him with a perfect heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands all imaginations of thoughts. If you seek him, he will be found of you. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever." David gives Solomon three things, kind of his last words. know the Lord, serve the Lord, and seek the Lord. Because David understood that life is serious. Life is not always easy, but I do believe it's usually simple. And yet, we can make it sing and dance the way we want to. You know, it's just amazing to me what has happened to photography. And I'm not a professional photographer, but about 2 or 3 months ago, I went to Arizona. I was going to work with a church in Phoenix. And I don't get there too often, maybe once a year. So I was going to take the camera and take some pictures. And I was, I guess, packing a little haphazardly, and I grabbed a camera. I thought I'd grab the right camera. I got to Phoenix, and I had taken the camera that uses film. And there was no film in it. So I go down to Walgreens and ask for film. They look at me like I was an archaeological dinosaur. They don't have film anymore. I ended up buying a camera. Got a good deal, but I ended up buying a camera. It's digital, isn't it? You can take a picture. Then you can crop it, you can rotate it, you can lighten it, you can even make me look good if you get a nice enough camera. And it struck me that that's exactly what a lot of people are doing to Jesus. Cropping him, rotating him, making him look like they want him to look rather than like the Bible tells us he is. Not taking life seriously. Developing an image of Jesus and of life to our liking. Well, you can try, but that's hardly going to be successful. The biblical Christ is foreign to our culture. Jesus is more often seen on t-shirts, pencils, and bumper stickers by many people than he is seen in the Bible. He's talked about by The Simpsons, by the Da Vinci book. Elton John said Jesus was a super intelligent gay man. How degenerated man's thinking has become. Life is serious. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, the first few verses, it says, it's better to go to the house of the mourning than the house of the merry. Why would that be? I think what he's saying is it's better to go to a funeral than it is to a festive occasion. You know, one thing funerals do, if we're ever going to think about the seriousness, the brevity, and the temporariness of life, there's an awakening there. I've come to appreciate funerals more and more. And I'm not going to say that I enjoy them, but there's an opportunity for us to maybe focus on what's more serious. A.W. Tozer, in one of his little articles, he asked the question, is the world a playground or a battleground? I want to quote a paragraph. Going back no further than our founding fathers, we are able to see a wide gulf between modern attitudes and those of our ancestors. In the earlier days, when Christianity wielded a dominant influence over American thinking, men conceived the world as a battleground. Men believed in sin and Satan and hell on one side and God, righteousness, and heaven on the other. These were opposed to each other. They were hostile camps. And man had to choose, and the choice was serious. One side or the other, no neutrality. Either life or death, heaven or hell, God or Satan. The fight was serious, it was deadly, and it would last a lifetime. Men looked at heaven as a young soldier home from war, laying down the sword for a peaceful rest. I think he has a point. In our red songbook, there's a series of songs. You can just listen. You don't have to turn. But they're in a row. They start with number 219 and they go through 331. There's a royal banner given for display to the soldiers of the king. Onward, Christian soldiers. The fight is on. Faith of our fathers. Sound the battle cry. I'm a soldier of the cross. Soldiers of Christ, arise. Stand fast in the faith. Stand up. Stand up for Jesus. The victory to win. Victory in Jesus. Faith is the victory. War songs. I'm not advocating militancy in our Christianity, but I am advocating an understanding that this is a war. And life is serious. And the stakes couldn't be higher. The world needs to know that. But how can it know it lest we tell them? And how can we tell them lest we believe it? Actions have consequences. Life is a series of choices. You and I make them every day. The world makes them every day. In Matthew chapter 7, very familiar verses, but oh so important, Jesus lays the seriousness of the choices. Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go therein. Because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way that leadeth to life, and few there be that find it. Life is simply a series of choices. Each have consequences. Even choices that are wrong that we're forgiven of, they sometimes retain consequences, don't they? And yet we look at a blameless world. No one's at fault. We rationalize our actions. We rationalize and justify the actions of those we love, even to the detriment of their salvation. The world needs to understand that every action has a consequence, but don't we also need to understand that? Life is a choice. We live in a society of distractions, and there is a tremendous cost to being distracted. I wonder if we didn't look at each of our refrigerators and what's posted on them, if when you really counted up what many of us have posted on our refrigerators is distraction after distraction after distraction. Not that they're wrong, but they're not really all that important. Pascal once wrote, "Being unable to cure death, wretchedness, and ignorance, men have decided in order to be happy not to think about such things." The cost of distraction. We live in the age of distraction. Cluttered lives, juggled priorities, relentless busyness, perpetual noise. Reflection is pushed out. Probably of all of the things we read about in the Bible that you and I do the least or the poorest job is meditating. Reflecting. Our propensity for never-ending distractions from that which really only holds true meaning. The deadening that allows for the inability to care about things that are really important. Novelty today is king. Toys, games, gadgets. The Ten Commandments were pretty simple. They're not hard to understand, but apparently they're hard to keep. Why? Because man gets distracted. Allows himself. Children of Israel got distracted. Moses was gone for a few days, and what did they do? Built the calf. You're not going to convince me they didn't know that was wrong. They got distracted. In the Psalms that Moses wrote, Psalms 90 and 12, in the King James it says, to count our days. The literal translation there is to account for our days. Every day that passes, I have to account for, and the only thing I can do with a day that causes me not to get shortchanged is to be wiser at the end of it than I was at the beginning of it. And you don't do that by getting distracted. But the Bible is full of others who got distracted. Demas, who loved this world more than the gospel. Colossians 4:14, Philemon's 1:24. And then we see in 2 Timothy 4:10, he had left. I think there's a real attribute in all of us maybe slowing down and remembering. Life is serious. Actions have consequences. And Jesus is the only answer. The gospel contains no promise to improve our felt needs. It simply offers to do what is needed for our needed needs and feelings. We need to be rescued from the wrath of God. We need to be freed from the power of sin and full enjoyment comes when we understand the most glorious being in the universe. Is that not what the world needs? I believe it is. But I repeat again, it's exactly what I need and it's exactly what you need. I don't think we need more philanthropists. Maybe not even more leaders, although we can benefit from that. We don't necessarily need more do-gooders. What we need are people who understand these basic principles. What the church and the world needs are people who have trembled in the courtroom of God as guilty sinners and who have heard and felt the joyful sound of mercy. Let me repeat that. I believe what the world needs and what the church needs are people who have trembled in the courtroom of God as guilty sinners and have heard and felt the joyful sound of mercy. Who are therefore merciful, loving, and sharing. This is what the world needs, because it will show the world how valuable Christ is. And when we don't display them, I wonder if we understand how valuable Christ is. What the world needs is the supernatural, spiritual renovation of the human heart. Matthew chapter 15, verse 19. The world needs to see things through a spiritual mindset, not through a secular mindset. But when they see a secular mindset in us, then where's the light? In Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 33 and 34. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. They shall know the Lord. What the world needs most is not a replication, of our imperfections and our limitations, but a Christ-like lifestyle. What the world does not need is more relevance. What the world needs now from us is not relevance, but a passionately stirred enthusiasm for the gospel. And let me explain to you why I say that or why I believe that. Should the church be relevant? Absolutely. But you and I don't have to make the church relevant. God already has done that. We get into trouble when we try to make the gospel relevant because it's already relevant. Let's just proclaim it. Relevancy, by its very definition, has to do with the short-term mindset. Relevancy, therefore often has little to do with the deeper issues of character and the soul. Rather, it's a relationship with something external, and that is not the gospel. Today, a relevant person is largely one who is simply skilled in echoing back to society the things it values most. If I wanted to be considered relevant by the world, I would just parrot back what they want to hear. In a society that's obsessed with appearances and image and reputation, relevancy is primarily cosmetic. Relevancy alone holds no virtue, nor does it hold a vice. But the love of relevancy, like the love of money, can blind people, can blind us from things that we ought to critique and numb us to things which are really important. The church must be relevant, but we don't have to make the church relevant. God already did that. And we can cause great difficulties for what the world truly needs when we strive to make it relevant by our understanding of relevancy. It was Jan Caron, and I don't know if Jan was a woman or a man, it doesn't matter, who said, "Sometimes we have to gag on the fancy before we can appreciate the plain." Sometimes you need to gag on the fancy before you can appreciate the plain. I think Solomon was trying to tell us that in his writing. I've done it all, and I gagged on it. And he finally, in his latter years, understood what was important. And I see in the latter part of his writings, particularly in Ecclesiastes, a man who desperately is trying to get the world to understand what's truly important. Life is serious. Let us hear the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. The Jesus that the world needs will never be found in the secular media or sadly in the school textbook. Satan is boring full throttle to blur man's image of the real Jesus. The reoccurring cultural message will ingrain in the minds of the world, distorting the clear view of Jesus. College professor, as I understand the story, once had a psychology class. First day of class, and he asked them to do two things. On one sheet of paper, write down what they thought the personality of Jesus was like. What do you think Jesus was like? Was he outgoing? Was he quiet? Was he bolstered? Well, just describe the personality of Jesus. On a second sheet of paper, they said, now describe your personality. 90% of the time, the personality that they wrote down for Jesus mirrored their perception of their personality. What was occurring? They were reshaping Jesus into their mindset. I don't know if Jesus was outgoing, if he was quiet. There are times in the Bible when he was one, times when he was the other. He was a balance, I suspect. But he wasn't me and he wasn't you, but we tend to place him in that concept. If you're an outgoing, talkative, humorous person, then you think of Jesus that way. If you're shy and introverted, you think of Jesus that way. But the Jesus that the world needs and the Jesus that you and I need is not a mirroring of us, it's a mirroring of what the Scripture says. Have you ever heard somebody say, "My Jesus would never send anybody to hell"? You know, they're absolutely right, because their Jesus doesn't exist. That's not the Jesus of the Bible. Truth is truth, no matter how we paint it. I read an article some time ago about the grace of God and thought it made a couple of good points. I'll just share it with you. What is more gracious than God warning us of what's going to happen to us if we don't obey? What is more loving than God telling us beforehand what's going to happen to us if we don't take life seriously? Some people say, well, that's harsh, that's cruel. Some people would think this message is harsh and cruel. It's not intended that way. It's intended to be biblical and truthful. Is it cruel when we take our children's hand and don't let them run through the parking lot or out into the street? No, it's loving. Therefore, is it cruel when God takes my hand and says, "John, don't go there"? Because this is what lies there if you do. No, that's loving. I believe devotional progress probably comes best to those who lead the plain and simple life. I've been blessed with a wonderful life. Most of you have also. But the older I get, the clearer it becomes to me that most of the things that have consumed my time over the years, they weren't wrong. They were just frivolous. And I'm not condemning you. I'm not condemning the world for these various actions. I'm just trying to get myself and all of us to understand that these basics are the issue. If you're here this morning and don't know the Lord, I'm going to strongly recommend Him to you. Because you can't get from A to H without Him. H being heaven. It is that crucial. Now is God's time. Tomorrow is Satan's time. Oh, we could recount all of the things that you and I as Christians, I'm sure, understand that the Lord has done for us. He's taken the poison of sin. What the world needs is exactly what you and I need. Let's take life serious. It's not a game. It's a joy, but it's not a game. For me, being here is not optional. Oh, of course, I could not be here. But it's not optional. You know, when we try to find happiness from external things, it doesn't pass the laugh test. One man said, doing that is kind of like duct taping sandwiches to the outside of your body to cure your hunger. It doesn't work. And if I thought decorum would allow it, I would have done that. I'd have had Earl stand up here and I'd have put sandwiches all on his outside and duct taped them. But decorum probably wouldn't have worked there. But that's exactly as logical as trying to use external things to make us happy. When I'm hungry, I want to ingest. This sermon was entitled, What the World Needs to Know, and I think that's true. But we do struggle, don't we, brothers and sisters, with being in the world but not being of the world. And if we lose that battle, then we become the world, don't we? Life is serious. Actions have consequences. and Jesus is the only answer. Plain, simple, basic. But I believe the gospel is plain, simple, and basic. And that's what the world needs most. And that's what you and I need. As we go through this week, maybe let's all try to keep in mind the beauty of the simple Christian life. Oh, I have distractions. You have distractions. The world is largely the religion of the undisturbed. Nothing up disturbs them. Everything's frivolity, fun. There's a place for that. We should be merry, joyful people. We should enjoy the blessings the Lord has given us. But life is serious. I like funerals because they remind me that in just a short time, I'm going to die. They remind me my wife is going to die. They remind me that you're going to die. And thank the Lord for giving us the opportunity to be ready. The invitation is extended as we stand and sing.